This is the Digital Production Buzz, telling you what's happening now and in the future. Production. Post-production. Distribution.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
This is the Digital Production Buzz. What do you want to know?
Hey. Hey, welcome to this week's Digital Production Buzz. I'm your Chief Buzzmeister, Philip Hodgetts. And this week's special guest host is Michael Horton from Lefsipug. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, I'm the little production Buzzmeister. Getting a little buzz off the Tarzana bar here that just opened at the Buzzmeister Studios.
Oh, don't tell Tarzana. Everyone, they'll want to share. Yeah. We'll have to get digital.
Yeah. Well, listen, you get perks when you are the co-host, so if anybody wants to be co-host, you can just order a little bottle of wine while you co-host.
That might have to be the little perk for the co-host.
Yes.
Hey, Digital Production Buzz is brought to you by Intelligent Assistants, systems that make you creative and productive without the effort, at intelligentassistants.com. By the ProApps Hub, which is free software that brings you the best of what's free and everything else you need all in one place. Be productive and creative without the hassle of running all over the internet. And by 1010 TV, hosting our live stream for high bandwidth digital media delivery. Contact 1010tv.com. We got a pretty good show tonight.
Yeah, we got a really, really good one. West Plate, Automatic Duck. Despite the fact that it's the worst name in all of software, but Wes knows that. It's still one of the great plugins that all of us need and use quite a bit. Also from New York City, we'll have Regional Buzz from Mick Vitti. And this one I'm really looking forward to, even though I love Wes. This is our special guest, Professor Jonathan D. Farley and Dr. Tony Harkin, who do... How do we explain what they do? They make sure that your movies or your television shows or your commercials are authentic mathematically.
Yeah.
In other words, that stuff that's in the background or the dialogue within the scenes are authentic.
It may be pure BS, but at least it's authentic BS.
Right, exactly.
It looks and seems believable or plausible. It's not the stuff.
Wait till you see their resumes.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I want to ask one of the questions I want to know is, what's the worst thing that they've ever seen?
Yeah. I mean, the majority of the country hasn't a clue, but these two guys do.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that.
And then later on in the buzz in depth, we're going to be talking about some developments in GPU technology. ATI have, of course, been previewing over at.
In Taiwan, right?
In Taiwan, yeah. Taiwan's been the big buzz this week. Well, they previewed a couple of things. One is a graphics card with H.264 hardware decode, so you can take the load off the CPU.
That's very cool.
And their version of multiple processors, multiple GPUs in the one computer. So you can, you know, step in the PC. When we move to a PCI Express architecture, which is not yet on the Mac, but is on the PC side, you can stack up two or more graphics cards in the one CPU.
When are we going to get the PCI Express?
It would be a very pleasant surprise on Monday, wouldn't it?
Yeah, wouldn't it? That's
and good. One more thing.
Yes.
The new dual-core, dual-processor PCI Express Power Mac. Yes. Thank you, Steve.
That's going to be announced Monday, right?
Yeah. Okay. I wish. I wish, but I have no idea. Hey, a couple of things that you should check out in the buzz, the news that's been going on every day of the week on the website. It's digitalproductionbuzz.com is... QuickTime 7.1 is available now, and you should do it. It fixes a security breach, and that really annoying crash every time you open the movie properties dialog box.
Boy, that thing was found really quickly. It was found within an hour after 7.0 was released and everybody started using it. Yep. So that's pretty cool that they fixed that problem.
Yep, and there's some improved compatibility with Final Cut Pro Studio. This is a recommended upgrade. Flip for Mac have released an MXF import component for Final Cut Pro that allows users to ingest MXF media. That's from Sony's XT Cam directly over Ethernet. So, video over video anymore? Forget that. And you should also check out KineMac.
Oh, yeah, that's very cool.
Real-time 3D design and animation for OS 10.4. All of that is linked off the homepage and the news page at the digitalproductionbuzz.com website. We will be back in just a minute with Wes Plate talking about workflow. This is the Digital Production Buzz. What do you want to know?
Yeah. Can you feel it, baby?
This is the Digital Production Buzz. What do you want to know?
And this section of the Digital Production Buzz is sponsored by the Pro Apps Hub, the one place you need to go to find out everything you need to be productive and creative with Apple's professional video and audio applications. You'll find daily productivity tips, briefing papers, critical warnings, index articles and tutorials. Everything that you need is there, and it's free, bringing you the best of what's free and everything else you need. Right now, our first guest is Wes Plate. Wes is, I guess, the president of Automatic Duck, the weirdest named software company on the in the business, I guess. And Wes is going to be here to help us through the alphabet soup of workflow, XML, AAF, OMF, and I'm sure there are a couple of others there. Welcome, Wes.
Hello, guys. Good to be back with you again.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, well, before we begin, I got to ask this. What was the origin of the name Automatic Duck, and what were the other names you came up with before you came up with Automatic Duck?
And when did you stop smoking that dope?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Michael, I know that you've never been a fan of the name, but before Automatic Duck, we actually had much worse names in the list. We were coming up with really bad stuff like
Automatic Beaver. You know, yeah.
Innovative workflow solutions and those kinds of names that just sounded clinical and dull. So there's a documentary series that was produced in the 70s by James Burke called Connections. It's been a favorite documentary, and I have the companion book for it. So I decided to look to that book to become inspired by something. And I saw a picture of this robotic duck and just started reading about it. And it said in the book that the automated duck appeared to flap its wings and appeared to eat and appeared to defecate. And just when I read those two words, automated duck, together, it really sparked something. And so that's why we called the company Automatic Duck. We just liked the way it sounded.
So it was your idea then?
It was my idea. I was inspired by history.
Okay, and you sold that to your dad, and he said, yeah, okay, I'll go for that.
The very next day, in fact, that night, I couldn't sleep because this idea of the company name was going through my head. So I stayed up all night researching it, and I even mocked up my business card that night. I brought it to my dad the next morning, and I said, hey, Dad, what do you think about the name Automatic Duck? And he sort of sat there for a second and looked at me, and he said, yeah, I like it. And so that was it. You know, when you're a company of two people like we were back then, it's pretty easy to make fast decisions.
Well, listen, I got to make a confession. I know I've given you a hard time over the years about the name, but it really has grown on all of us. Now all of us call it AD, or we call it The Duck.
It's
and
The Duck, right.
The duck sticks really well, and it is... Let's face it, it's a cool name.
It's certainly a memorable name, and being remembered is rule one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, you absolutely know what Automatic Duck does. However, for those of you listening out there, Wes, can you tell everyone what the heck does Automatic Duck do?
Sure. So if you're new to the concept, we are a plug-in manufacturer. We are a software developer, and we make plug-ins for host applications like Final Cut Pro and After Effects. But we don't do effects. We don't do glows or nice titles or text. What we do is we interchange timeline information between the different programs. So, for example, you could start a project in Final Cut Pro, realize you need to finish it on a Symphony from Avid, and use one of our products to translate that timeline information. Or you might do some effects previs in Final Cut, and you want to do the compositing in Combustion or in After Effects, and so we have plugins that will translate timeline information between those as well. So we currently have five products. We are working on releasing a sixth this summer, as well as a major release to one of the existing products this summer that will allow users to get between a whole variety of different products, both video editing products as well as digital audio workstations. And so we've expanded quite a bit from when we first started. Our very first product was to go from Avid into After Effects, and we've really expanded out quite a bit from then.
Listen, most of us, or at least, are in the habit of doing EDLs. Why does Automatic Duck do a better job than EDLs?
Very good question. EDLs have been around for a very long time, and they theoretically can do the job. The problem that people have run into with software products, as Final Cut was growing in popularity, was that EDLs didn't seem to get the job done when you needed to get from originally from Final Cut Pro into an Avid. For whatever reason, either the EDLs out of Final Cut weren't properly made, or Avid was having a problem reading them. EDLs were often just, they didn't do anything. But even when they did work, they were quite limited. You were limited to one video track, and then most all of your effects were not able to be represented in an EDL. Being the EDL was, you know, the EDLs were developed back in the 70s when, you know, effects and video themselves were quite primitive compared to what we're able to do today. I mean, how many editors create a video timeline that only has one video track? I mean, it's not very common any longer. So by using the current technologies, OMF, AAF, and XML, we're able to get and interchange a lot more information between the applications, information that EDLs were just never designed to handle.
I just, you know, you interchange between everything, it seems like, right now, which is very cool. That means you're constantly working. What is the most popular plugin, if I can ask that? Which is the biggest seller?
the biggest seller for us has been our After Effects import plugin. It's historically been the biggest seller, and even today it still sells the most. And so those would be people who are working in Final Cut Pro and the Avid editing systems, and they need to hand the work off to a graphic designer, or maybe, you know, that person is both the editor and the designer, and they want to, you know, take the visuals up a notch, and After Effects provides them, you know, a real nice tool set for doing that.
And
by combining the real-time playback and real-time editing capabilities of the NLE with the, you know, the real sophisticated compositing and animation tools in the After Effects, it's a real good combination, and that's our best-selling product. And then the second one down from there is our export plugin for Final Cut to allow people to go into Avid editing systems. So replacing what would have been the use of an EDL to offline on Final Cut and then finish on a Media Composer or Symphony.
Can I ask that stupid question, Philip?
Go right ahead. We are talking with Wes Plate from Automatic Duck, and Wes is here to talk about the alphabet soup of workflow.
This was the stupid question that we were talking about prior to the show, when we were talking about the show. I asked Philip, because I'm not a technical guy, as you know, Wes. And now that Final Cut Pro supports XML, why do we need...
What he's trying to say is, why do we need Automatic Duck?
I mean, if we want to go to an Avid, for instance, now apparently Philip answered my question that Avid doesn't support XML, but what if Avid did support XML? Why couldn't we just export XML from Final Cut into Avid's XML and just bypass any use of Automatic Duck? Is that something that would be in the future? Or, I mean, what do we need Automatic Duck for, if that would be the
right
case?
Well, it's not. Yeah, it's really not necessarily a stupid question. XML has gained in popularity over the last couple of years, but if you step back to NAB, must be 2002, the big buzz that year was AAF.
Right.
And AAF has been long brewing to be the ultimate interchange file format. It's being developed by a consortium of different manufacturers, and the idea behind it would, in a lot of ways, you know, spell less revenue for a company like ours, because with AAF, the idea is that Avid imports AAF. Let's see, who else is involved in the thing? Panasonic, yeah. Pinnacle, I think Apple's involved.
So if
people were to go with the AAF file format, theoretically, things just work. Of course, the nice thing about standards is that everybody implements them differently. So, you know, you could still have a standard AAF file that theoretically is compliant and conforms to all the rules, but for whatever reason, the other side doesn't open it. So we found, actually, we've had a lot of consulting business and opportunities just sort of making sure that these standard files get read by on the other side. Now, Final Cut has been doing a really good job with their XML interchange file format. There's a number of reasons why. I believe that a couple of them are that the first reason, they have basically hidden nothing. If you want to know about an effect or you want to know about the sequence, it's in that XML file. It's all there. Other companies have traditionally hid at least part of their effect structures, or, you know, things that they thought were valuable to them. They've hid them in their Exchange formats. Also, XML is just a text file, so it's very easily readable. If you're doing your development and you find you have a problem, it's very easy to just pop it open in a text editing program or even open it up in a web browser, and you have a real nice way to look at the files, where with OMF and AAF, it's a lot more complicated. You can't just open up a text editor and read the file to see what's wrong. So, you know, theoretically, if the whole world did go to Final Cut XML and everybody implemented it just quite perfectly, well, then I may be back editing again. But so far, we find that there's just, you know, not everyone is going XML yet. People are trying to go the AAF route. It's really hard. And
let me get this straight.
We're busy.
So I understand this. So there is a Apple version of XML, and there might be some other version of XML? Would that be?
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely
and so
the
there's
case.
An Apple version of AAF, you know, and somebody else's version of AAF?
AAF isn't available also. There's an XML version of AAF, but that's not going to be any use. You could not import that straight to Final Cut Pro.
Right.
What Final Cut Pro is dealing with is an XML version of the Final Cut Pro project. The other thing is an XML version of the AAF project. Is that roughly right, Wes?
Yeah, the AAF Association is working on an XML version of the AAF file format, but the Final Cut XML and the AAF XML will be completely different things. XML is a very, very powerful file format. It can do almost anything. You can do all kinds of massive database things with XML. You can take a big FileMaker database and export to XML, but that's just... it's a different XML than Final Cut's using. So, yeah, it's very possible that there could be a day where every single editing system deals with XML, but yet none of them talk to each other because they're all proprietary to that system, or they all have different formatting issues.
Right.
And then, so there's a lot to it.
Yeah. An automatic duck will be converting XML to XML at those days.
That very well could be.
Traditionally you've been between video applications, but at NAB, didn't you announce something with Pro Tools?
Yes, we did. We announced, I mentioned to you that our second best-selling product is our solution for going from Final Cut Pro to Avid. We announced that it is gaining a new capability, which will be to export OMF files with embedded media and volume information included, so that users could take their rough mix into Pro Tools, into Nuendo, into Digital Performer, or other digital audio workstations that can support the OMF2 file format. And we're also working. We also announced the same thing: an export plugin for Premiere Pro, so that Premiere Pro users can take their sequences out and do their mix in a professional sound environment as well. And so, yeah, we have branched out into getting video or getting audio out of video editors into audio editors.
And just before we wrap up, Wes, where can people find out more information? Where will they next see you?
AutomaticDuck.com is our website. It's all one word, AutomaticDuck.com. And I'll actually be in Boston next week on Wednesday at the Avid Final Cup, Avid User Group meeting. Pardon me. If you have any questions on our website, please send us an email. And I'm going to hang out in the chat room for the rest of the show. So if anybody has any questions, I'll be there as well.
Great talking to you, Wes.
Thanks very much, Wes.
Good talking to you guys.
You are listening to the Digital Production Buzz, and we will be back in just a minute with a regional buzz.
This is the Digital Production Buzz. What do you want to know? practical color correction is the perfect starting point for an editor moving to color correction. QuickTime movie clips show exactly how to read the scopes, do basic correction, and correct mixed and changing color balance. Practical color correction delivers just in time, just enough training or reference on everything from starting with good pictures to making bad pictures better, including emergency recovery techniques for underexposed and overexposed shots. You'll learn how to match shots in sequence from different cameras, times or locations, and make good pictures into great pictures. Advanced techniques are shown step by step through the unique floating interface. Turn dull shade to bright pictures, a dull day into a sunny day, or day to night. Practical color correction covers every color need, from basics to manipulating mood with color. Practical color correction is available from intelligentassistance.com.
This is... Oh, we're just enjoying the theme. It's our theme for Regional Buzz. And our Regional Buzz this week comes from Mick Vitti in New York, the founder and president of the New York Final Cut Pro user group. Hey, Mick, what's New York's a fairly major production center. Does the majority of the work there come from film, television, or corporate?
Oh, geez, you know, it's such a big footprint of our business here in New York. There's a lot of all of that, but you know what I think that is the most visible community is? It's probably film.
Right. I'd have thought with a couple of networks headquartered there, you'd see a lot of television.
Well, yeah, you do see a lot of television, but like somebody was just saying, I'm here at All Mobile Video, they're having their X-Free user group meeting, and so I was doing a little, let's say, snooping. And I heard a couple of guys talking about the time code issues between L.A. and New York. L.A. is typically a drop-frame time code regime, where New York is actually not.
Hey, Mick,
it's a non-drop frame.
Mick,
and so it made me think, well, why? Because we're working more in film? Or
no, actually, so. Mick, it's Michael Horton.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Lately, New York is picking up film-wise only because their film commission is sort of getting their act together, so you're getting more and more films being shot in New York City, because it's always very difficult to be shoot anything in New York City. But their film commission is doing much, much better. There's a lot of commercials being shot, of course, a few movies here and there and some television shows, it's growing leaps and bounds, but Mick knows more about that than I do.
So do you get a lot of independent film production going on, or is it all the big stuff?
There's some big stuff coming back. I mean, Michael's right. Our film czar is, I don't know. There's been a mass exodus out of New York City because of pricing or perceived hassles or whatever, you know, chasing basically work up to Canada. And we really can't compete with know what the Canadian government offers.
No, you know, nobody can in America.
And also the economic differences. Canadian dollar goes a little further, and then American dollar converted to Canadian dollars still.
Yeah.
Can't compete with that. New York City is an expensive place. There are a lot of people involved, and rent is expensive. You know?
Terrific. Well, Mick, thanks very much for being with us for the Regional Buzz this week. You can get more information at the New York Final Cut Pro User Group site on nycfcpug.com.
Also, look for them at the TV Expo.
And now it's time to pick our brains.
And again, I remind you, you're picking Philip's brain, not Michael Horton's brain. Michael Horton's brain is complete sawdust right now.
Well, we shouldn't have opened the bar too early.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway.
But we're having a great time here in Tarzana.
Yes, indeed. You can send us your Pick Our Brains questions at philip@digitalproductionbuzz.com. You can call us right now if you're listening to the show live on 866-897-8924, and we'll pick up the dime. But we can, from the emails, we have a couple of questions, and we'll see how many of those we can get through in this segment. One of the two, in fact, these are two, came up again in the week, last week, two oldies but goodies. two questions that just keep coming up.
They keep coming up every day on the forums.
And so let's try and see if we can give them some definitive answers. A quick audio question. I'm doing a mix with six audio tracks and then out to a Digibeta deck via my DeckLink card, and I'm jealous.
Yeah.
What is the proper decibel level on the Final Cut Pro audio media? I'm thinking it should be averaging 12 dB, meaning minus 12, but not sure. As Wes said, the nice thing about standards is that there are so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the standard between analog audio and digital audio is totally different. Back in analog audio days, we could... You know, we basically aim to hit the average about that 0, minus 4 sort of level on the analog meter. And if it went over, peaked up a little bit, plus 3, plus 4, it didn't distort. We had a lot of overhead and headroom there. In fact, you'd probably go up to plus 12 before you got distortion, and then it would just roll in gently. You know, you get a little bit and then a little bit. Digital distortion's the cliff, you know. It's perfect until it's terrible.
Right.
And there's no in between. So if you hit 0, you go over that 0 dB... In digital audio, you're in distortion city. So you don't ever want to hit 0. You're way back down. And really, depending again on who you ask, but generally speaking, somewhere between minus 18 or minus 14 is where your 0 tone from your analog deck should hit.
I just did this recently when I brought my audio over to Digital Film Tree, and I brought it in at 0. And it was peaking all over the place when it sounded great on my little workstation.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we brought it down to minus 12, everything was wonderful.
Yeah.
Especially when we went to DVD and everything else. So, yeah, you're absolutely right with between 18 and 14. 12 was good for me.
Yeah, well, actually, I tend, with the Lafsipug DVDs, I tend to be sort of peaking around the minus 12 or hitting an average of minus 12, peaking
up
to...
But why is it that I'm not peaking on my machine? And when I output, it's especially to either tape... Or DVD, the thing is just going nuts when I bring it to the post house.
Well, because
I have to bring it down to minus 12 before I bring it out to or send it out to tape.
That would
even
be about
though
right.
It does, even though it doesn't seem like I have to, but it does.
That's because that's the proper level for tape. I mean, minus 14, minus 18. I mean, people tend to be conservative. In fact, you know.
Well, now we know.
My rule of thumb, it would be. Stick to minus 18 average at about the minus 18 level, and keep it a peak at minus 6. Final Cut Pro does this really nicely and easy for you.
But when I'm watching the audio meters, it isn't peaking at 0.
Well, it shouldn't be peaking at 0. It should be peaking at minus 6. You say,
going into the red at 0. No. I'm going into the, you know, then I'll bring it all the way down to 18, and then
it's fine. Yeah.
But it sounds low.
On your setup, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably because when you're going back to analog for monitoring, you're not making the appropriate compensation at that point.
I have a lot to learn about audio.
And you can...
Which is why I go to audio post houses.
Yeah, I always had the good sense to go to an audio post house for anything serious. Never go over minus 6. In Final Cut Pro, it's got nice green, orange, red. You know, basically, if it's green, it's okay. If it's orange, it's iffy. And if it's red, you're in trouble.
Right.
And that's the easy way about it.
I talked too much. We didn't get it to Rolling Titles.
Oh, Rolling Titles. That's a whole other thing. I suspected we may not. Audio is pretty complex. If you've got heavily compressed stuff, you can probably average, just cheat it all up a little bit higher, like commercials, and keep them up louder than the program around them. You're listening to the Digital Production Buzz, and we'll be back with our guests in just a minute. This is the Digital Production Buzz. What do you want to know? Yeah.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
This is the Digital Production Buzz. What do you want to know?
And you're listening to the Digital Production Buzz. This section of the show is sponsored by Intelligent Assistants. Intelligent Assistants makes systems that are, make you creative and productive without the effort. Make the system do the work, not the editor. Check out Practical Color Correction if you're just getting started with color correction, or Killer Titles if you really need to kick your titles up another notch at intelligentassistants.com. Right now, we are joined by Jonathan Farley and Dr. Tony Harkin. They are from Hollywood Math and Science Film Consulting. Have you ever been annoyed by clearly bogus pseudoscientific science in film or TV? I know there are times when I have, from the limited amount of stuff that I know. Well, these people don't want to destroy the fantasy of films, but they just want to enhance it by guaranteeing that the authenticity and believability of the setting, of the props and dialogue kind of are believably, plausibly fictitious. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi,
hello.
Hi,
Dr. Farley and Dr. Harkin. This is Michael Horton. There's a couple of films that come to mind right off the bat. Good Will Hunting and A Beautiful Mind. Now, I'm assuming you saw both of them. Are those movies that we saw, especially when we saw the graphics on the blackboards and then speaking about the mathematical equations, was that just a bunch of gibberish, or was that pretty authentic stuff?
Actually, in the case of the movie Good Will Hunting, I actually know the guy who was the technical consultant for that film, and mathematicians could tell you that the mathematics actually was correct. But it wasn't mathematics that would win you the Nobel Prize of Mathematics, the Fields Medal.
What do you recall a really bad example of totally bogus material? What's the worst example you can remember?
Well, actually, it's not so much that the technical jargon in movies is so outrageously bad. It's just that if you watch a movie these days, you'll notice that you never see a hunchbacked mad scientist wearing a white coat with electrodes flashing lightning anymore. And that's because audiences today have become more sophisticated, and they just want more realistic portrayals of mathematicians and scientists. And that's one of the things that we at HollywoodMath.com will give people.
What drove you to start this, go down this path? Did you see a movie where it just drove you crazy, or was this something that you were just driven to do?
Well, actually, it started with A Beautiful Mind. I wrote an essay for the British newspaper The Guardian, as well as Time magazine, and after that, a scriptwriter called me. He had a script that was a movie that was going to be made, and a production company set up, and a director, but it had to do with the mathematics of the human genome. Now, I don't know if that movie won an Academy Award, but the scriptwriter wanted me to go over some ideas. And with Dr. Lizzie Burns of the biochemistry department at Oxford University, we did that. And after that, Lizzie and I decided to get together and start HollywoodMath.com.
And more and more filmmakers and scriptwriters and directors are realizing that audiences are more and more appreciating a bit more of authenticity in movies that relate to math and science. And just that extra bit of authenticity, audiences may not know the particular details, but they can tell when the culture of say two scientists talking to each other is authentic or more correct. And what we do is try and provide script writers and filmmakers and directors with getting the culture and the interactions between scientists and mathematicians just a little bit more authentic.
I can't tell you how this is just fascinating. In a past life, I used to be an actor, and we had technical consultants on the set at certain times, and depending on the director, I would say 80% of the time, any time a technical consultant started talking to the director, the director pretty much brushed him off and said, "It just won't work with the story.
Nobody will notice it."
Yeah, well, either nobody will notice it or it just won't work. I mean, you would work with not only the directors and the writers and the production designers. especially when it comes to what is up on the blackboard, what is authentic dialogue and all that. Since you've started this thing, are you getting a lot of resistance from the people that you work with when you have, when you give them your input on exactly what should be in this movie that you're working on?
Well, we get a little bit of that. Tony and I have served as consultants for the CBS crime drama Numbers.
Uh-huh.
And when I flew out to L.A. to see the filming of one of the episodes, I was talking to the creators of the show, Nick Bellacci and Cheryl Hewton, and some of the suggestions that I had made about previous scripts, they actually liked, and they told me that. But sometimes when I would suggest alternate dialogue or ways they could introduce particular topics, whether they're talking about Schrodinger's cat or maybe Gödel's incompleteness theorem, I was told that the TV writers don't like those suggestions because they think their writing is perfect already.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's what they think. Those are their words, not mine. So,
I believe you. I believe you totally. On Numbers, you're obviously math consultants, not spelling consultants, or they'd spell it correctly. For those who don't know that particular show, they spell the E in Numbers with a reversed 3.
Right. Oh, that's very good.
Yeah. Okay.
So, how is this business doing? I mean, are you getting a lot of work? I mean, it's because this is just obviously it's something that we need, but yet the majority of the country probably at least, well, heck, me, I wouldn't. You know, I saw Good Will Hunting. I saw A Beautiful Mind. I didn't think twice about what was on the blackboard. And
That's not the only service that's why we emphasize that's not the only thing that we do is to get equations and things on the blackboard correct. And in fact, that's maybe one of the least important things we do is put things on equations on blackboards. It's to emphasize getting, again, the interactions and the culture right. One of the good recent examples is in the movie Primer.
Uh-huh.
The writer... director and the editor Shane Carruth. He was actually studied mathematics as an undergraduate.
By the way, to let the audience know, that was a small film that showed at Sundance just recently. And I actually saw that movie. And it's a great movie. It's a great movie, and probably due in no small part to some of the details that you guys put in there.
Well, we didn't work on that that movie
never mind.
In terms of script or the print. But what we did do is the PR firm for the movie asked us to attend the Boston premiere of the movie and lead an audience discussion afterwards because it is a movie that deals with science issues and engineering. And Shane Carruth, he did an excellent job in the screenplay and in the acting of getting the interactions between the engineers, talking like engineers, dressing like engineers. You note that they even wore ties in the garage in that movie, which is something an engineer would do.
Really? Is that true?
Engineers, yeah.
You guys wearing a tie right now?
They did a good job. We're not, no. Okay, we're not engineers. Yeah. We're mathematicians.
Yeah, mathematicians, engineers.
They did have a very authentic feel of what engineers do and how they interact with each other. So what we did was they asked us to attend the Boston premiere and lead an audience discussion after the movie because it's a very complicated movie dealing with science and probably have to see it two or three times to fully appreciate the movie. And so on behalf of HollywoodMath.com, I attended the movie and led an audience discussion afterward, and there were a lot of there was a lot of interest from the audience to talk more about the science and math in the movie. And so I led the discussion. And so that's one of the things in post-production of a movie that we can offer to sort of add value to generate a buzz about the movie is lead these audience discussions. Because there seems to be a yearning for people to want to talk about this math issues and science issues that, you know, because our society is so technological, you know, there's a growing interest to understand the world around us.
And one of our chatters in our live chat is asking if you had any input to the movie The Core. I'm not even familiar with the movie.
Oh, that was...
Yeah, we both saw it.
Yeah.
We did not have any input into the movie at core, and actually the science in that movie was absolutely abysmal.
was that movie?
So you can't take a machine and go to the center of the earth.
well, what is wrong with just simply, like Star Trek, make up entirely new science when you want it? Oops.
Hello?
A bad question.
Yes, hello.
There's nothing wrong with... that's something we should also emphasize, is a lot of mathematicians and scientists and technologically sophisticated people, they like to nitpick the science that they see in movies or in science fiction movies like Star Trek.
Yeah.
We specifically emphasize to people that we work with that we're not nitpickers, that we're not going to complain about a science, you know, bad science in a science fiction movie, because it's by definition science fiction.
Yeah.
So we want to you know, help them to get some authenticity and to get the math and science, make it plausible, but without detracting from the story or from the fantasy of movies.
That's terrific. Where can people find out more information, and how would they go about getting in touch with you?
Well, people can actually check out our website, HollywoodMath.com.
And their contact details are there?
Yes.
What would be your, just before we wrap up, what would be your favorite job so far?
Well, I think it was really great working with numbers and getting to meet some of the actors in the show, like Rob Morrow, who plays the lead FBI agent, one of his FBI partners, Sabrina Lloyd. And it was just cool, actually, being there, something like walking into the FBI headquarters, and just seeing how it works and talking to many of the writers. So I'd say that was probably the coolest project, and we're happy that Numbers is getting renewed for the second season.
Are you getting good positive feedback from your peers?
Well, most academic mathematicians don't really care about anything dealing with Hollywood or publicity. It's been good to get attention on shows like Night Beat were on yesterday, or Associated Press or the Boston Globe. But for the most part, mathematicians do what mathematicians do best, which is add big numbers together.
Right.
But mathematicians are always happy when a new movie comes out where math is part of the theme of the movie, because anything to promote mathematics and science is good for mathematics education and good for, you know, the country at large. People who, you know, young people who watch movies with good math and science might be inspired to take them up as careers.
Right. And before we go, I have to ask this question. What clothes do mathematicians wear while they're talking on an internet radio show?
They wear black, of course.
Oh, they wear black. Okay.
Terrific. Well,
I could talk to you guys for 2 hours. There's so many questions I want to ask.
Well, keep going. We have still a little time.
Oh, they do? I mean,
yeah.
Because you have to look at the resume of Jonathan Farley here. I mean, this is just amazing. I mean, you know, my son, I have a 15-year-old son who can barely add, and he's in the ninth grade. There's something about a mathematician's... Are you guys born with a brain that's wired differently than the rest of us? Or is this something that just comes from a desire that was instilled into you by either your parents or from something that happened to you when you were 4 years old? I mean, why is it that you guys can do this stuff and we can't?
Well, I think that people can, but they psych themselves out when they're very young, or they might encounter poor math teachers. And so they convince themselves that they can't do mathematics. But I think mathematicians do have a special love for mathematics, which you might not find in the general population. And Antoni and I actually go back 25 years. We're in fifth grade together. And his father's a mathematician. His wife's father is a mathematician. Of course, both of us became mathematicians, along with another one of our friends. So maybe there's something in the water.
So
my brother-in-law is a mathematician as well.
Oh, so there's.
But I should add. I was going to say something very similar to what Jonathan said. It's not that people can't necessarily do math. There's a phobia, I think, that paralyzes a lot of people. There's a strong math phobia. But what's interesting is, though, even though many people do say that they can't do math and they hate math, the movies that have math in them, like Good Will Hunting and some of the others, they do great at the box office.
Right.
So this is an interesting phenomenon.
Those are two very good movies, and they also made math very sexy. I mean, let's really face it, that the math was very, not only dramatic, it was sexy. And it was the fact that this young guy could do those problems that these older guys had been working on forever. It was wonderful.
It's like you go see Dirty Dancing, you want to go and learn to be a dancer, you go
exactly.
And see Good Will Hunting, you want to go and do math.
I mean, I would imagine a lot of people were inspired to do math just from Good Will Hunting alone. And Beautiful Mind.
And not only do those movies make math look sexy, with movies like Mean Girls starring Lindsay Lohan and the upcoming movie Proof with Gwyneth Paltrow, you're going to find now sexy mathematicians.
Well, there you go. That's even more important. This is a visual meeting we're talking about.
Well, thanks to a couple of very sexy mathematicians from HollywoodMath.com, we've been talking with Dr. Tony Harkin and Professor Jonathan Farley.
Thanks so much for what you guys do. I think it's absolutely wonderful.
And we will be back with a Digital Production Buzz in Buzz in Depth coming up fairly shortly. This is the Digital Production Buzz.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
This is the Digital Production Buzz. What do you want to know? Digital Production Buzz. What do you want to know?
AGI Crossfire?
I want to know why it was that I did so incredibly badly at math. I took a year off to go and be an exchange student between what would be my junior and senior year. I went
Our engineer Greg, he's good at math, right?
Yeah, he's pretty good at math. He's allowed to have money and I'm not.
Right. You're a doctor. Right, a doctor of like science and stuff.
Math. Well,
you know how to two and do you know why 2 and 2 equals 4? Well, mathematicians do.
I took this year off. I came back out in my first math class. It was like that was less understandable than the Japanese that I'd been living with for the year before. Suddenly, it was like a totally foreign language in the math class. It took another 3 or 4 weeks before I started to get the lingo back again.
Yeah.
And it's probably just, it is just fear and...
I think what those guys do is just awesome. I think it's great. I mean, it's very cool. They take a something that we don't understand and make it understandable. And that's a gift.
And that's what we do here on the Buzz in Depth section of the show. We try and take one of the news themes from the week and add a little bit of clarity and a little bit of understanding to what was there. Remember that, of course, the news is available in the Pro Apps Hub, which is free software. In the Pro Apps Hub, you also get tips, daily tips, productivity tips, and briefing papers, and the world's only index to the internet for digital storytellers. But the news is also available on the Digital Production Buzz site, and sometimes you'll find things there that are not of interest to a Pro Apps user. Two of the stories that came through the news this week are both had a GPU theme. Now, at the Computex show in Taiwan, which is...
By the way, how come you weren't there? You go to every trade show in the world. Why didn't you go to Taiwan?
Actually, I don't go to many of them. I don't go to...
Yeah, you do. You go to every one of them.
I haven't been
you
to...
You and that guy from Inside Mac Radio.
Well, we...
He goes to every freaking trade show in the world.
Scott goes to more than I do, for sure. Scott and I, in fact, will be doing the Digital Production Bar's Inside Mac Radio thing from Boston Mac World coming up in July, and then the following week we will be down in New York with Mick Vitti on the user group booth in the Javits Center doing the Digital Production Bar's Inside Mac Radio show from DV Expo East.
So you'll be doing that with Scott, too. So he's going to go to both of those things.
Yep, he's going to both of those.
There's probably something in Florida that week, too, so you might as well go down there and do one.
Maybe there's something on in the weekend in between, and we could get out
just
of the
don't
cold.
Don't wear a shirt because it's so humid in the summer, you know, in the East Coast.
So,
all right, go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk geek. ATI was showing one of their R520 Radeon cards. It sounds like a pirate. R520! Yeah, or is that a Scott? Anyway, their R520 Radeon card is going to feature our H264 playback through hardware acceleration. Now, the advantage of that, of course, is that when you're playing back a DVD, HD DVD with H264 playback, or playing back some of those superb H264 movies on the Apple high-definition trailer site, which I can't play on my laptop because it's not powerful enough, then you will pass off that load to the graphics chipset, and they will do the decoding for you, taking the load from the main CPU.
So essentially, if they come up with a graphics card that you can put into your laptop... We don't need a G5 tower in order to play this crap back.
That's right. It'll mean that the minimum requirement will go down.
Right.
Because H264 is particularly heavy in its decoding requirements. The Apple specifier 1.8 gigahertz.
Why is it that the file size is so small, but we need a bloody G5 to play the damn thing back?
Actually, that's a really good question, and it's actually almost a perfectly linear equation. You know, you take a really old encoding technology like MPEG-1.
Okay.
And MPEG-1 is really easy to decode, but the file sizes are relatively large. And this is the trade-off. What they have done is, and I'm not sure if I truly understand the details, but I know in practice that the better the encoding technology is, the smaller and high-quality file sizes, like with Windows Media, H.264, Real 9, all of, onto VP7, things like that, that we trade off file size for... processing power on the playback. It does a lot more processing during the playback to compensate for what it's gone into the file, and it takes more effort to pump it back up big after it's been squished down really small.
Well, it's a conspiracy. It just means you have to buy a damn G5 in order to play your stuff back.
And one of our chatters is asking, what about Crossfire, which in the perfect segue to the next part of this, and that's the other thing that ATI talked about at Computex, was the next generation of GPU technology showing their Crossfire technology. That Crossfire ties two graphics cards together so that you can either swap them out so each card can do half the screen in a split-screen configuration, or each card can do alternate frames.
Holy cow, that's cool.
So, you know, you effectively get twice the graphics chip throughput performance. NVIDIA talked about something like this recently as well. They call it double graphics processing. And you need two identical NVIDIA GeForce 6800 Ultra, 6800 GT, or 6600 GT cards linked together. ATI are talking about a slightly different architecture. They will need one of their new approved Express 200 Crossfire-based motherboards and a specific X800 PCI Express series card can be used with it, and the second card does not have to be a Crossfire card. So they have a little bit more flexibility, but you have to be on an approved motherboard. And I think that brings us to one of the crucial points here, is that both these technologies require PCI Express motherboards, which is nothing like what we're using at the moment.
Right.
Just because PCI is in the name, it doesn't... don't get it confused. Now, if you look at the...
And this is PCI Express and PCI X... are different things?
They are different things, yes. PCI is the input-output bus that we have been talking about before. PCI X is just a higher-speed version of that. PCI Express is a new computer architecture. I like to use the analogy that if you're talking PCI, PCI is like a freeway that joins in with the memory bus and the processor bus and all these other buses. And anyone who drives around LA knows that where the freeways join, the traffic becomes a mess.
Right.
So the idea is to avoid joining the freeways together, and what PCI Express does is essentially puts this one superhighway down the middle of the computer, and everything ramps in and ramps
so
out of that.
So PCI Express is on the motherboard.
PCI Express is a motherboard architecture.
So that means that all that cool stuff that Decklink is doing doesn't work on the Mac.
They are going to make an adapter
to
make it work with regular old PCI if Apple haven't announced anything
so
by the time.
So who do we talk to on the Mac side to make this crap work?
Mr. Jobs, I think, would be the man.
Right. Do that. Greg, get on that. Call him right now.
Call Steve Jobs, right. Say, we want PCI Express, and that's why I said, you know.
Want it on Monday.
Yes. If I had my druthers, on Monday.
Monday, Apple, that's what we get.
Apple will be previewing. And
By the way, are you going to be there on Monday?
I'm not going to WWDC this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that guy from Inside Mac Radio will.
Scott is actually not going this year either. our producer says that he has arranged for the announcement to be made on Monday.
Okay.
And that'll be great. He's had to change his presentation, but it will be announced.
Right.
Now, it would be super cool if on Monday we did see PCI Express-based Macs announced, even if they're not going to ship for 6 months, announce it.
You know, guess what, folks? I just bought a Mac G5 2.5 tower.
Then it's almost
certain. We're going to do this damn thing on Monday. Is going to come. Oh, jeez.
Well, thank you for doing that, because now it's almost certain that that's what's going to happen.
Exactly.
So, you know, what we're going to do is, these do need the PCI Express graphics cards.
Okay.
They're both sort of mixing them in different ways. They're not actually putting a lot of data over across the PCI Express, but they are mixing them, ATI mixing together before they go out, and NVIDIA are bridging between the two boards. And that's, you know, GPU is the area where growth can happen. We can get a lot better performance out of our cards.
Speaking of that, Moore's Law, we pretty much peaked on that CPU, and now we're just dealing with GPU?
Pretty much. Anyway, that is the Digital Production Buzz this week. I'd like to thank
something to ponder, folks.
Co-host Michael Horton, the head cutter of the Los Angeles Final Cut Pro User Group. Wes Plate, the president and co-founder with his father of Automatic Duck, despite the oddball name. Automatic Duck is the leader in timeline translation between the world's most powerful NLE and compositing systems. We'd like to thank Mick Vitti for the regional production buzz, the regional buzz from New York City,
and
our
very
guest,
cool theme song.
And our guests, Professor Jonathan D. Farley and Dr. Tony Harkin from HollywoodMath.com. It's making things more believable. The Digital Production Buzz is sponsored by Intelligent Assistants, making systems that make you creative and productive. Productive, that would be my new word. Without the effort, that's at intelligentassistance.com. You can get the Pro Apps Hub from proapps-hub.com free. It's free software that makes you the best of what's free and everything else you need in one simple place. Be productive and creative without the hassle of running around the internet. And we'd like to thank 1010 TV for hosting our live stream for high bandwidth digital media delivery. Contact 1010 TV. Next week's show is about production and distribution. We've got some guests innovating in that area, but this is for next week. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. The buzz will be back next week.